In the Haftarah this morning, it talks about mountains crumbling away and says that even in those days, when the mountains disappear and the landscape changes and nothing is as it was before, God's love will not disappear. Now, maybe the prophet meant it literally. Maybe he meant what Gershwin said in his song, that the Rockies may tumble, the mountains may crumble, but our love is here to stay. But I suspect he meant what Gershwin meant metaphorically, which is that there are times in human history when mountains crumble, when nothing is the same as it was yesterday. And in the rubble, it is our nobility and our task to make sure that love endures. It is the defining moment of recent American history, of course. The day that the towers came down, and that section of New York known to anyone who has ever visited the city was reduced unthinkably to rubble. And people walked dazed and dust-colored through the streets, searching for themselves and for those whom they loved, not knowing if they would ever see them again. It was an unthinkable day. So unimaginable that despite the fact that we saw it over and over and over again on an obscene loop of repeated tragedy, watching the plane strike again and again into the towers, it still was impossible to believe. We saw buildings crumble, and yet the images that stick in our minds are of the woman in the window looking up at the sky, or the man leaping to his certain death, or the fireman rushing in, knowing how many of them would never come out. And the truth is that in the intervening decade, in 10 years, we almost have not absorbed any better what happened that unimaginable day, even though we have talked about it, written about it, heard about it, seen the images over and over again. But there are some things the mind cannot absorb. And yet, the fact that we can't fully assimilate the tragedy of that day does not absolve us, doesn't get us off the hook from learning its lessons. And I want to offer three lessons of that day to you this morning, all of them rooted both in the Torah and in American history, that we must not forget. And the first is to look at the time in our history when we suffered a similar catastrophe, which was the destruction of the temple and the burning of Jerusalem. That was, in Jewish history, an even greater catastrophe because the entire city, our capital, was destroyed and our people exiled. And you know, perhaps the most famous story that emerged from that tragedy was the choice of one rabbi, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, knowing that no one would be allowed out of the city of Jerusalem. He said to his disciples, "Put me in a coffin and tell them that you need to leave the city because the city is burning and you must bury your teacher and your master." And so they put their teacher in a coffin and carried him outside the city. And the Roman guards let them go for a funeral service, since all of Jerusalem was a funeral service at that time. And they brought him to the Emperor Vespasian, or soon to be Emperor Vespasian, who was responsible for the attack on Jerusalem. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai emerged from the coffin and asked for a little corner called Yavne so that he could set up a school. Now imagine for a moment that an entire country is being destroyed and its capital is burned. Who among us would think that that was the time to go to the conqueror of our country and say, please let me go with a couple of my students and set up a school? It's unthinkable. At the time, many Jews thought of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai as a traitor for leaving Jerusalem. But if he hadn't done that, you wouldn't be here. One of the lessons of the Torah is that human learning and creativity and effort and faith have to be cultivated and perpetuated even in the midst of tragedy. And that the person who read poetry as the buildings were being burned understood the message. The people who fought the Revolutionary War were among the most educated people of their time, and they didn't stop reading and writing and learning because they were fighting. You listen to the exquisite letters written by Civil War combatants, and you realize that this is part of our tradition, that our people, as they went from land to land, as they were exiled, as they were persecuted, they carried with them a book. And so one of the lessons of 9/11 is not just to live your lives the way you lived them before. There was this bromide, this saying that people would say and government officials would say, the way that you defeat terrorism is to live just as before. Don't let it destroy your life, as though shopping was the answer to terror. Go to the stores. It's true that daily life must continue, but unless you deepen your life, you've missed the message. Unless you use it as an opportunity, especially with the holidays coming, to remember that the more fully and richly you engage with this world, with your mind and your soul, the more you negate everyone who is a destroyer, everyone who would burn. The opposite of burning is building. And we don't only build buildings, we also build souls. The second message is when 9/11 first happened, one of the things that people said, which was amazing to hear, is we're all Israelis now. Now, people said, now we understand what it is to live under this threat. And all I can say is that which can be learned can clearly be forgotten. How quickly the world forgot that in fact to live under the constant threat of terror changes you and changes your country. It's hard to remember what it was like to fly on an airplane before 9/11. But we have to remember that our sisters and brothers in Israel face this every day. and their vigilance in the face of a continual threat from the nations around them is something that even if the world forgets, even if some of our fellow Americans forget, we must not forget. ...9/11 was to be sure an attack on America, but it was also, as you know, an attack on us. It's why immediately afterwards people said, ah, you see, there were no Jews in the building because the Jews knew about it, or the Jews did it, or the Jews fill in the blanks. In a world in which an anti-Semite can decide he wants to make a movie about Judah Maccabee and get a major studio to fund it, because why shouldn't Mel Gibson, after all, be an authority on Jewish history? You know that despite the laughter, there are some important lessons that people are not learning. That the danger is not trivial, and it is not intermittent. It is constant, it is serious, and the only thing that prevents 9/11 from being repeated over and over and over is a combination of the vigilance of forces that protect us and the incompetence of those who hate us. But both those things can change in an instant, as they did on that day 10 years ago. And then the third lesson. The third lesson, which we have heard before, but it cannot be repeated often enough. The third lesson is contained in the Torah of the messages of the people who died. And it is a kind of sacred literature. Mark Bingham, 31, who was one of the group of passengers who tried to overpower the hijackers and control the plane, called his mother to say goodbye. He said, "I want you to know I love you very much. I'm calling you from the plane. We've been taken over. There are men who say they've got a bomb. Goodbye." Flight attendant on flight 93, Cece Lyles, 33 years old, in an answering message to her husband, "Please tell my children that I love them very much. I'm sorry, baby. I wish I could see your face again." 31-year-old Melissa Harrington called her father to tell him that she loved him, and minutes later left a message on the answering machine as her new husband slept in their San Francisco home. "Sean, it's me," she said. "I just wanted to let you know I love you." Captain Walter Hines of New York's fire department dialed home as his rig left Firehouse at 85th and Lexington on his way downtown. He said in his message, "Things are bad. I don't know if we'll make it out. I want to tell you that I love you and I love the kids." He never made it out. Over and over and over again, the people who faced death didn't call to say they hated those who were destroying them, or to remember grudges or cruelty or pain. They just called to express their love. On that same flight, Brian Sweeney called his wife and got the answering machine, told her they'd been hijacked, and he said, "Hopefully I'll talk to you again, but if not, have a good life. I know I will see you again someday." And then there was Tom Burnett's famous call from United Flight 93. "We're all going to die," he said. to his wife, but three of us are going to do something. I love you. If we remember anything about that day, we have to remember that people that didn't know that they were heroes ran into the fire as well as away from the fire. There were people who lost their lives because they saved others, and people who stayed with others because they didn't want them to die alone. And when they got a chance to express what they had to say, they expressed their love. And that's the legacy that they leave us in the face of cruelty and hatred and destruction and terror. We have to remember them, not only for their sakes, but for our sake. 10 years ago, when this happened, I read a poem to the congregation that I will read you now 10 years later. Dirge Without Music, that Edna St. Vincent Millay wrote between the wars in 1928. But it's as if she wrote it watching the towers fall. I am not resigned to the shutting away of loving hearts in the hard ground. So it is, and so it will be, for so it has been, time out of mind, into the darkness they go, the wise, the lovely, crowned with lilies and laurel they go, but I am not resigned. Lovers and thinkers, into the earth with you, be one with the dull, the indiscriminate dust, a fragment of what you felt, of what you knew, a formula, a phrase remains, but the best is lost. The answer is quick and keen, the honest look, the laughter, the love, they are gone. They've gone to feed the roses. Elegant and curled is the blossom, fragrant is the blossom, I know, but I do not approve. More precious was the light in your eyes than all the roses in the world. Down, down, down into the darkness of the grave, gently they go, the beautiful, the tender, the kind. Quietly they go, the intelligent, the witty, the brave. I know, but I do not approve, and I am not resigned. That spirit of love, of loss, of pain, of courage, of hope, and for us of faith. That's what it is to remember 10 years later. Please rise for the El Malay Rachamim.